Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Phil, who, as many of you know, joined us on our last trip to Zambia and was the genius behind installing the preschool English program and has agreed to be with us to talk about her experience of doing that tonight. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Jen.
Hey. So we had a chance to catch up with you before the trip, and you talked about kind of all the fun miracles that lined up for you to be able to create the curriculum and all of that. So I thought it would be fun for people to hear, how did it actually go down when the rubber hit the road? What actually happened? What was it like?
Well, when the rubber hit the road, that's a good, really good way to put it. I had this whole thing planned, which, you know, eventually took off. But the interesting thing for me was that, you know, when we first got all the kids together, they were all three and had never been to school before. And so, you know, they had these little tiny voices,
yeah,
and you couldn't hear them say anything. So the biggest thing I think I spent 2 or 3 days on is just to get them to say hello so
yeah,
we could hear them.
Yeah. And I mean, I remember walking in after. So, I mean, you and Joy and, well, actually, Joy wasn't there at that point. I guess it was
not yet, no.
You and Susan,
me and Susan,
who was the assistant teacher. Just hour after hour after hour, and I'd come in, and I couldn't believe it when I came in, and they were all saying, hello, hello, hello. And, of course, if you just walked on the scene, it would seem like no big deal at all, but I just knew what a huge deal it was that they were actually finally speaking.
I know, because the first day, you know, they were very shy, and they weren't, and they didn't, you know, it was like, God, what's going to happen? But, by the end of the first day, they were actually saying hello. And by the next day, they were saying, hello, how are you?
And it's really, it's like a miracle, really. I mean, it's funny to say it, but I suppose it must be the experience of parents watching their children grow up. I haven't had that direct experience. But just watching a child actually learn something, and in this case, learn a language that they know, you know, they've never heard before. And to just watch it suddenly emerge from them is so much fun.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. It really was. And it was, it's like, I love that part of teaching anyhow, you know, either whether you're teaching them to read, and this time we're just teaching them to
yeah,
speak
yeah,
English. And it just to watch the miracle of learning and the light in their eyes. And it was just so delightful to be in there with them. That was my big experience, was just delight. You know, even
yeah,
when they weren't quite at their best, you know, they're just so innocent and sweet,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, just so innocent. And as you say, when we first started out, we chose very little kids. We sort of met with the team and looked at, okay, what age do we want? And everyone agreed, oh, three, that's the best age because,
mm-hmm,
you know, they're really still just little sponges and they're ready to learn anything, and, you know, they already have a hold on their own language, and so they're ready for the next one. And so that first day,
yes,
these itty-bitty little kids walk in. And I think your point was a good one. I remember you talking about, you know, I think they're about the size of two-year-olds in the United States, which is part of why, to us, it was such a shock how little they were.
Yeah, they were very little. I think there were only two of the girls that were what I would think of as an average three, and they could have even been four. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is that they were. That is the best time, you know, to get a group of kids. I mean, to teach a child, let's say,
mm-hmm,
another language. But what they had to do is learn classroom management.
Yeah.
On top of everything else. And that's what, you know, when we eventually put the fours and some, I don't know if we had fives, but some four-year-olds in there,
mm-hmm,
they had somebody they could model, and it really did. That's when I think things started really taking a turn for
yeah,
real learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the others, they would have learned. It would have just taken a longer time. But I think they're catching on faster with the other kids in.
And I really appreciated that, you know, again, sort of practice in action of looking at, okay, so we've got one situation here. Is this what we want to stick with? And not being rigid about, no, we have to have three-year-olds, but really looking at kind of the team coming back together and looking at, okay, what are our options here? and deciding to try, well, let's bring some 4-year-olds in and see what that's like. And do you remember the end of that first day when we had the 4-year-olds in and I came in and we were sort of debriefing the day, the kids had gone home. I said to Joy, how was it? And she just went, fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I think we're going to go with the 4-year-olds.
Yeah. Yes, I think we ended with a good group. You know, we have, I think, about 5 3-year-olds and then some 4-year-olds. I don't know if we have any 5-year-olds, but we had a good mix of an age mix where, you know, the kids that are older will learn and at some point graduate on to school, regular school. Mm-hmm. But the 3-year-olds can stay with the program. By the time they're 4 or 4.5, they're going to be speaking really well.
I just have
that sense, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I really appreciated about just watching all of you, so eventually we did bring Joy on board, who became the mm-hmm. full-time teacher.
I call it
watching
finding.
You and Joy and Susan work together is that sort of teamwork that you brought to it. So Joy had some experience in teaching preschool children, as do you. And Joy, she's such a good candidate for the teaching position, and her accent, there were places where her accent wasn't clear in the way we wanted it to be, wasn't clear in the way, say, Teresa's was, and that one of the functions you were really serving is coaching her on that. And I just loved how open she was to that and how willing you were to do that and how it's really, I guess what I'm saying is that we were all in a process of learning, not just the kids.
Right, not just the kids. And you know, we all were at the whole time because, you know, I had no idea at first, you know, how this was going to go over or what we were even going to do. The first few days, we just had to kind of make it up as we went along. Yeah. And then, you know, after we got them adjusted a bit and got a couple of the 4-year-olds in there, we were actually able to start the curriculum.
Yeah.
And as we noted from the teachers' reports, they're reporting once a week about what's going on. And what we have seen is that Joy and Susan report that they are, you know, now they're on lesson 5, and, you know, they can continue on with that wonderful curriculum of singing their way through English, basically, is what it is, and, you know, now.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, it seems like, I just want to underline what you're saying about them sending weekly reports. You know, again, it seems like, oh, that's great, you know, no big deal, but, oh, my goodness.
What
had to go on behind the scenes to build up to the point where there was a computer available, we have internet ready. You know, I mean, I think you worked with Joy to teach her a ton on the computer in order to get her ready to even
That's right,
to be able to send you an email. That there's a weekly email coming from the consistently every single Friday from the
teachers
telling us what's going on. I mean, that in itself is another miracle.
It is. And, you know, finding Joy, literally, was so, it's so perfect because, as you were saying earlier, she is open, she is willing, she is, you know, eager to learn and to follow that curriculum. And I was just so amazed by her, and I was amazed by Susan. And I think that was one of my biggest joys, was just being there with all those people, those wonderful women and the men and Teresa and Veronica and all those people, and the community and the cooperation. I mean, the children can't lose in that kind of environment. They're going to pick all that up. And it was just to me the most wonderful, I think, environment that outside of, say, the monastery maybe that I've ever been in, you know.
And that's a really nice point. I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that I really got a palpable sense of is that the whole community is pulling for this program to be a success.
Yes.
So there are, 15 children, I think, in the program, and Joy and Susan are teaching. So it's, you know, you could say there's 17 people in that room, but it's like all 40 of the cooperative members, all, you know, the parents of those children, it feels like the whole community is really, really behind it in wanting to support it, wanting to make it a success, because I think there's a sense of, if we can really make this work, we're sowing the seeds for enormous possibility for the future of these 15 children, but really for the entire community in going forward with this model.
Yes, yeah, and Teresa actually voiced that. Remember how she said that she really wanted that preschool there, and she really wanted it to work because she knew it would make such a difference for the entire community, even just to have it.
Yes, exactly. I was just going to say that. I'd forgotten that, actually, until you just said that, that one of the points I think she was making is, again, you know, Cantalumba has this reputation of being, it's next to the graveyard, it's so poor, you know, it's sort of the poorest of the poor in Ndola, and people who live there get made fun of and they're looked down on and that sort of thing. And so one of the things she's really eager for across the board, and particularly with this project, is to prove some really amazing quality, you know, good work is happening right mm-hmm. in Cantalumba.
Yeah, and it is. The people are amazing.
Yeah. So, Sister Phil, deepest gratitude for your part in making all of that happen.
Well, Jen, deepest gratitude for your part and for you for letting me, inviting me. It was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had, so I'm so deeply grateful for that.
Mm, that's really nice. More to come, I'm sure.
I hope.
All right. Anything else you want to throw in before we end?
I think that's all, just the gratitude for it all. And it, I just wish people, you have to experience.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my first whole, you know, the first whole thing of going there. It just,
yep.
I read everything. I felt a part of the whole thing. But driving up that first time, it just bowled me over.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's I'm right with you.
Amazing.
You know,
yeah.
come on September 22nd, if you can. Come join us at the Bridge Walk to be part of the energy of celebrating what's going on in Cantalumba.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's all show up.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Phil. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Thank you, Jean.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Those magic words. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
That was a little funny here.
Yeah. Just like, whoop, whoop, whoop. You know, Jen and Phil talking about all of those, you know, miracles. And it's funny to consider what we went through, or interesting, or whatever the description, what we went through to get the ability to send emails out of Cantalumba. You know, and here, you know, we deal with computer glitches, and we are so used to computers. They're just so much a part of our lives that we don't, you know, we just, it's kind of like being mystified by a telephone at this point. Anyway, it was just fun to hear them. I have this little thing that I want to say before we move on from there, and then I'll be ready to move on. But you know, we hear those stories, and Phil and Jen talking about how much the community is behind that, and how important it is for the whole community that that school is there, and that in itself is extraordinary beyond telling, because forever those people have been pretty much completely disinterested in going to school or sending their children to school because there's no sense in it. There's no point. It's not going to get them anywhere. It's not going to net them anything that they want. And the fact that they now realize what an education can do and what it means for them, and I don't know this. I'd love to hear Jen's take on it, but I would bet part of it is watching what happens with Teresa, because Teresa has an education and she can speak English, and she's been now, you know, all over the world, and gets to do all the kinds of things that most of them would only dream of, and she's from their very community, and the only difference between her and them is she has an education and she can speak English. And I just think we've hit that tipping point where it's now clear that even if it's possibly not in the cards for the adults, they get it. That if they do with their kids what Teresa's mom did with her, which is insist that she speaks English, insist that she learn to read and write, and that sort of thing, that there's that kind of possibility for their children. And that is, it is just so big, it's almost impossible to grasp.
Yes. Yes, like the air we breathe that we take for granted.
Oh, I mean, with our kids, you know, I mean, kids may not be that excited about school always, and but we all know that our kids are going to go to school. It's not we don't have a, well, why would you bother sending your kids to school? It's not like they're ever going to be able to get a job. You know, we worry about the college education they have in terms of being able to get a job, right? And so just that shift to actually see the value in an education is just I just think it's one of the best things we've brought there. And of course, that definitely follows having a full stomach and being able to concentrate, because your physical needs are somewhat met. But it's so exciting. And this next phase, we've talked for a while about having an English language center in Cantalumba, where the quality of the education is so good that people are coming from other parts of Indola to send their children for tutoring there, if nothing else, in the same way that people come from all over to get clean water there. So
yeah.
I think it's going to happen.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, I can see the energy that's built around that and the vision that you've laid out there for these kids.
Yeah, and as you say, you didn't say it this time. You're getting ready to say it. Jen said it a minute ago. September, what's the date, Michael?
22nd.
September 22nd, Chrissy Field, Golden Gate Bridge. We get to celebrate all of this. And dance.
Yeah.
And get a new T-shirt.
New T-shirt, and I've heard that the image, the logo, is coming out soon. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's coming up pretty soon.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And the other thing that's happening is Guidance Day for monthly donors this Saturday, September 1st. Look at anything about your practice one-on-one with an experienced facilitator.
Yes. Keep that karma wheel turning away from suffering.
Yes. A special practice opportunity offered to monthly donors who contribute $45 or more monthly. And visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read about Guidance Day or the Bridge Walk and to sign up. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Linda.
Who is this?
Linda.
Linda. Hey.
Hey.
Is this Linda from the Deep South?
It is. Linda from Alabama.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How about y'all?
Good, good, good. What's going on?
Well, there's always lots going on, but I think what I've been sort of struggling with today is trying for the 100th time to stop eating sugar and drinking caffeine, but which the caffeine part's not as hard for me as the sugar part, but
And so the 100th time,
at least the 100th.
Uh-huh. So tell me about the process. You decide you're going to stop.
Okay. I decide to stop, and then I don't keep anything sweet at home, so that's pretty easy. And I don't, don't seem to have any trouble with doing that. But then when, like, say I'm at the office and somebody's brought in Krispy Kreme donuts,
Oh, those are evil people who do those
they
things.
They are evil.
Yeah.
Really, and I tell them, why do you let people, it seems like nobody there wants to gain weight or wants to eat stuff, but they let them bring it anyway. But I can't really, you know, say that it can't happen. So,
no.
So, I, you know, it feels like just a craving. I mean, you know, it feels like I just can't stand it, and then I just give in.
Uh-huh.
You know?
And so it sounds like, it's kind of an either-or. You either get the donut or nothing.
That's a good question. Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
because that's kind of a hard sell.
Right. I see what you're saying. Like, I could give myself some other. I've tried that. The idea of giving myself some other positive thing instead. Is that what you're thinking, sort of?
Yeah, is there something that you would see as a treat, as fun, as kind of celebratory, but wouldn't take quite such a toll on the system?
Right. But when I'm doing good, you know, like when I get, I think I may have gone as many as I think probably the most 30 days before without, you know, eating anything. Mm-hmm. And when I'm doing that, I can do that, like I might let myself have some other food that I may not think is that great for me, but I like, but at least it's not sugar kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
I do that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm very good at the whole finding something else, like substituting something else, like doing something fun or whatever. It's like nothing's that much fun as eating a Krusty Kreme donut.
Right, but the right after, like how far down your throat does that donut, the last bite of that donut, have to be before the
beating starts?
Pretty much
as soon as I get through eating it.
You just lick the last
of
that off your fingers and they're after you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and I mean, I know you know this, but it's good to talk about it anyway. I mean, we would say nothing tastes as good as that. But we know that that's not what's actually going on, right? Because what's actually going on is you're getting set up for a beating.
Right.
And so we could say, actually, nothing feels as bad as the aftermath of eating a Krispy Kreme donut.
True.
Yeah. But we, you know, the voices, of course, don't want us to focus on that. They want us to focus on how good they taste. But that's not the real story. I mean, that's such a small part of the story, in fact.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So what would it take to set up your life so that you always had an alternative to Krispy Kreme donuts? Because you know, I watch parents of little kids, and you know, Cheerios are big. Now, I personally think that's sketchy, but it seems to be a popular thing. And so, you know, on their stroller tray or whatever, you know, they've got this pile of Cheerios.
Right.
But mom always has four or five things in her pocket, or dad, to haul out when the child starts getting hungry or, you know, restless or whatever it is. And then we get to a certain point and we get trapped in this, you know, I don't need to plan to take care of myself. I'll just leave it up to circumstances and trust that I'll be okay. But of course, most of us know that actually doesn't work. That's not, you know, that's not information coming from life. Right, that's information coming from a system that's going to talk us into eating Krispy Kreme donuts and then beat us bloody afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. So if you were to, you know, approach you as if you are the mom of the toddler or the 4 or 5 year old or, you know, at any age where, you know, kids are burning through that food and they need constant refueling. And you approached, you know, there you are, mom, and you've got these little kids, and you know if they see those donuts, they're going to go for them. So you want to have a healthy something as an alternative.
That's a good idea, because I do sometimes, like, you know, the hunger. It's like I'm hungry, and it's like, oh, well, I'm hungry, so I got, you know, I got to eat something. So I
might as well
have a Krispy Kreme donut.
Might as well be a Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could even be, you know, I don't know how you feel about these, but some of the kind of energy bars that people, you know, put a lot of effort into making pretty as healthy and nutritious as you can have that kind of thing, and it's a, so it can be a treat, and it's a snack, and it actually does give you some nutrition if you're hungry, and there, you know, you don't have to have it every day, but when everybody else is having the donut, you've got something. And in fact, you know, you might find out that you do really well having, you know, breakfast and then something partway through between breakfast and lunch and then something in the afternoon and then dinner and like that, that that might really speak to the sugar cravings.
Right. Right. Okay. I will try that.
Let us know, okay, because You're not the only person.
I know, and I want to just say, I just kind of want to say that I'm going to commit to it. You know, I'm kind of thinking if I can commit to it to you,
uh-huh.
that might help.
Yeah, well, I was somewhere, I can't remember where I was, but somewhere going on the way to a retreat, and I was picked up at the airport by somebody who was going to that retreat, and this is somebody who has kind of food issues. You know, it has allergies to certain kinds of foods and, you know, tries to eat really healthy. And I just watched the attention that went into having these snacks all the time and not getting out there somewhere where the only thing, you know, you're starving and the only thing available is fast food. You know, she had this,
right.
this little...
Yeah, and I, you know, I think I tell myself a lot that it's hard to come up with stuff that I can eat, because I have several things I don't like to eat. I don't eat dairy, I don't, you know. And
yeah.
so coming up with something that will work for snacks, but
yeah.
I think that might be EKC self-hate. Doing
oh,
that
yeah,
thing,
that
so.
Could... That, yeah, because that
so
could be a
I
great...
So maybe I just need to really make an effort to figure
yeah.
those things out, because that would be a big difference if I just had something to have.
Always, and it's always with you. You know, it's in the car with you, it's in your bag with you when you go into, you know, it's you make sure you leave the house, you've got the car keys, you've got your wallet, you've got your dark glasses, you've got your snacks.
Right,
yeah.
put that on
and
my
it
list.
Really takes the power away from those voices that are not on your side.
Right.
And besides which, I don't know if you're in the 300 for 1,000 club, but boy, if you could come up with a snack that tasted good and
right.
have sugar and dairy and, you know, all of these other things that most of us
gluten,
are
right.
trying to stay away from,
right.
you know, I'd be a customer.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's a good thing to
yeah.
think about,
and,
too.
And
yeah.
in fact, you can just sell the recipe. I would even make it on my own. You don't have to make them and send them.
Just come up with a good recipe.
Good recipe. All right.
Yeah. yeah.
Thank you,
okay.
Linda.
Thank
Let
you.
Let us know, will you?
It was great to hear your voice.
Yours too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Linda. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to break for a message, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night. Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's so great. I love the radio show. I do.
What's going on in your life?
Well, what's going on is what I've been looking at is I recently got back from a retreat, and it was a really great retreat, and I had an opportunity to look at a lot of things, and one of them was how conditioning had kind of hijacked my spiritual practice. And so what I've been doing is I've just been adding, I made a new plan for myself about different things. And one part of that plan is calling into the radio show. And even if I don't get on, then I'm listening to it every week. I made a thing for my car so that I can listen to it off of iTunes or off of the website. I download them and then I listen to them in the car in the morning. And then another part of my plan is recording and listening. And that's where I've hit a bit of a snag.
Mm.
What I noticed is on retreat, it was the first time I made as many recordings as I did. And the whole time I was doing it, conditioning was telling me, this is stupid, you sound stupid. And I would just be like, I'm making the recording. I'm just making the recording.
I'm not looking for a recording contract.
It's like they don't have to be good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very supportive environment, you know. So, So I made the recordings, and what was interesting is when I did get, you know, even before I got on the plane, I was listening to them. I listened to them on the plane. I kind of can't stop listening to them. Like I don't think that they're stupid. It's kind of funny. I was listening to them, and I was like, these are really sweet. These are really dear. These are really, you know, like ones that where I'm. Yeah, and even ones where I'm kind of identified, it's like, hey, I'm really identified there.
Mm-hmm. I like her. I want to help her.
Yeah. But where the snag is now is I resist recording. I do. And how I resist it is, see, what I tell myself is on retreat, there is an assignment, and I would do the assignment, and I had to, you know, and that was it. You know, it was, like, very structured, and at least, you know, I was feeling that it was structured. And I recognize that I could be that structured for myself without being at the monastery, but it does seem more difficult. And I guess I'm just trying to look at that and looking at ways to work with that.
So I bet you know we're in a resistance email class.
I am in the resistance email class.
So I bet you know I'm going to say, actually, you don't resist.
Right.
Egocentric
right.
conditioning, self-hate resists, and it does resist, and it, you know, it, as we've established, it resists anything that's good for you.
Yes.
So now, do you? Is there a time in your day when you are kind of on your own? Like I love to record and listen while I eat breakfast, because you know, I'm good company while I eat breakfast, and. So I like to do that, and I do it for another reason, which is, it's a kind of a consistent check-in for where I am, and over time, you know, I get to kind of watch the flow of my life through the recordings when I, you know, first thing in the morning. So there's that. Then this just occurred to me when you said that, and I'm gonna start suggesting it to people because I think it's a good idea. Do you have Transform Your Life either as an app or as a book?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Both.
So, you know, on each of the days on Transform Your Life, there's a quote by somebody famous, and then there's an assignment that goes with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if people chose to, I'm opening it up right now as we speak, if people chose to, you could have the assignment each day as your recording and listening assignment.
Mm.
So it'd be like being on retreat, but it's a retreat that you would just take with you. Then, you know, you could record about it. You could record it first thing in the morning about what you see or blah, 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 blah. And then that's your focus for the day. And at the end of the day, you could do, you know, as you drive home from work or whatever, you do another recording on what you saw about that. So since you're a smartphone kind of a person, obviously, you know, you just set your alarms so that,
right.
You know, the alarm goes off, Transform Your Life is there, there's your assignment, you set it for the evening, the alarm goes off, and you check in and record about what you saw.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it takes all of the, because, you know, you've noticed, conditioned mind gets us with, well, you know, I will do it, but later, because I don't have time now, or I don't really feel like it, or I don't have anything to say, or, and so it just, it takes all the argument out of it. Like, this is what I'm
doing. Yeah.
This is
that's what I noticed when I was on a retreat. It was like, you know, the way that it worked there was a bell would ring, and then we would just kind of drop whatever was happening for a second there and do the assignment.
Yeah.
And I noticed that because it was just like, okay, that's what you're doing now. You know, like,
yes.
And you're right. I do it. You know, obviously you're right. Conditioning futzes around. You know, well, you know, you should 5 minutes from now, or, oh, well,
right.
You know, when this person leaves, then you should go. And you know what I mean? It's like, it's not the same feeling as like, okay. And I think that was part of it. I think like when I went back and listened, because I can remember recording and at the time being like stopping the recording and being like, oh God, that was going nowhere. You know, that meant nothing. You know, and I go back and I listen to it now, and I'm like, that is so interesting. And I realize that like it all could be interesting. It all is whatever it is. But when conditioning wants to come in and tell me how it's got to be and when it's got to be, and,
that's right. Which you can also record. So
as you're
doing your assignment during the day, you could also be recording all of the ways that resistance tries to stop you, sabotage you, thwart you. Then what you do is you write all of those down and send them to me, because, you know, I'm writing a book on the subject and I could use all the help I can get.
Okay. That's good. See, if I have like a homework checker, that's good. I will do my homework if I know it's getting checked.
No, but you know, that's a twofer. It really is, because you get to do the assignment, and then the double whammy is you're recording how resistance tries to control your life. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
today,
well,
is it going to fight you?
Yeah, well, some of the best recordings, well, not best, you know, but whatever, but what I find useful are these recordings I made where I can, you know, I'm saying to myself, like, I almost didn't do this, and then da-da-da-da-da, you know, and it's so interesting, because it's like, conditioning told me not to, and I turned the recorder on anyway. There was one day where I almost didn't do it, and I turned, and two people were doing it, and I was like, oh, I've got to do it.
Yeah, you're pressure.
You know, just, yeah, but what that taught me was, you know, being around people who are doing this practice is really important. Like, that does, I am peer pressure. I am, you know, whatever, influenced by peer pressure.
Oh.
And when I'm with people who are practicing, I practice, you know, and
there's not
okay.
a lot of that going on out in the world.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We really
yeah.
do have to make it work for ourselves as we can, when we can.
Yeah.
Sticking together.
Well, that is so helpful, really. That's a really great
right
suggestion.
Now all
really
you
like
need
it.
To do is report back. Remember, your homework is going to be checked.
that's right All right, well, thank you so much, Sherry. Thank
you,
you're Michael.
Welcome. Thank you, Lisa. Good night.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber, and we have another call, Sherry.
Hey.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Sherry, this is Stephen from South Carolina. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, I'm going through kind of a rough time right now. Actually, I tried some hormone therapy a few days ago, and I think it's got my hormones all kind of messed up, and I think I'm coming out of it now.
I'm having a hard time understanding you. Are you on speaker or earphones or anything like that?
I'm not on a speakerphone, but I'm on a cell phone that is in a poor reception area. Is it breaking up?
No, and I can hear you better now. But I didn't hear what kind of therapy.
I said I was doing some hormone therapy.
Oh, hormone therapy.
Some adrenal hormone therapy, and I think it's got my my hormones kind of scrambled up right now, so I've been experiencing some depression lately. But that's not really what I called to talk about. Sherry, I want to start by saying that, you know, I've been doing this practice pretty consistently now for about a year and a half, and, you know, some before that. And it's been very helpful to me as far as lessening my suffering. So I'd like to thank you for that. And but there's something that's come up recently that is really causing some doubts for me. And I'd like to run it by you, and hopefully you could explain it to me in such a way as it would alleviate these doubts that I have. I've been working with Rebecca, the Zen Awareness Coach, and a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the whole idea of there not being any right or wrong, because I was really feeling stuck and having a hard time making decisions, and she was, you know, we were talking about the fact that really there is no right or wrong thing to do. And I told her that, you know, that I accepted that, but when I had read it in the books, and it wasn't a new idea to me, but when I started to examine myself to see why I doubted this teaching, what I came up with was that, well, if there's no right or wrong, then there's no basis for making any sort of moral distinction, and there doesn't seem to be any basis for any real compassion, really, because suppose you had a friend who was an alcoholic, and that person was begging you for a drink, and you were wondering, well, would it be compassionate for me to give him the drink? After all, he really wants it. And if there's no right or wrong, and if I might as well flip a coin to decide what to do, like Rebecca was saying, then I might as well flip a coin in order to decide whether to give this guy a case of whiskey or not.
Stephen, let me stop you right now, okay? This is what you're doing, is what you're falling for, is classic conditioned mind. Let's take this out into a hypothetical, imaginary, dualistic universe in which, and then XYZ. Okay? So the next place that people go is, so if there's no right or wrong, then there was no problem with what Hitler did. Okay? If there's no right or wrong, then there's, okay? Now, of course, I'm not going to have that conversation, because that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is you, not some guy who's an alcoholic and you have to decide whether or not to give him a drink. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about, the application for what Rebecca was talking with you about, is people get paralyzed with, should I take that job or shouldn't I? Should I stay in this relationship or shouldn't I? Should I buy that or shouldn't I? And conditioned mind gets people into a duality and then throws them back and forth between the two walls and ruins their life. And what we're doing in awareness practice is we're learning to pay attention to what we're doing so we can see what happens as a result of that. That's what we're doing. So, you know, most of us are not in a position actually to make a decision about whether or not we should kill 6 million people. Okay, so discussing those kind of hypothetical situations, conditioned mind loves, because it takes us completely out of the here and now where life is actually happening. So if we want to awaken and end suffering, then we will do whatever it is that we're doing, and we'll pay attention, and we'll see what happens. But what people do is decide there must be a right way and there must be a wrong way, and what I have to do is go up into conditioned mind to figure out what that is, and in the meantime, their lives just go right on by.
Yes, I see that, and I've experienced that, and it is helpful. So, you know, let's forget about hypothetical situations. My reason for introducing a hypothetical situation was simply to ask the question, then, does that mean what you just explained, if there's no right and wrong with respect to these kinds of decisions that you talked about before, is there a right and wrong with respect to making an ethical decision then?
What there is what happens as a result of, and we have no way of knowing what that's going to be, and the way it's interpreted is absolutely subjective.
Okay, so I want to be as clear as I can about what you're saying. Are you saying that there's no cause and effect? There's no...
Stephen, this is a up-in-your-conditioned-mind, intellectual, romp around karmic conditioning, and I'm not interested in it.
Well...
If you can get into now and ask me a question about your life now, your practice now, I'm happy to have that discussion. I am not happy to have hypothetical discussions, and this is still a hypothetical discussion. It's a waste of time, Stephen, and it's a waste of your life. What you're dealing with is not doubt. What you're dealing with is conditioned mind, getting you to noodle something that is utterly irrelevant. Let's make it real, okay? I'm an alcoholic, and I haven't had a drink in 10 years, and I decide that I'm going to go out with friends and have a few drinks. Is that wrong? Well, what's going to happen is that I'm probably going to start down the path again of not being able to stop drinking. So if I didn't know that that was going to happen to me, then it's a very good thing to go out with friends and have a few drinks and find out, because I'll never be confused about that again. But what people do is get into conditioned mind and a story about what it means about me if I do that, and how it's a failure, and how it's the wrong thing to do, and how I'm going to disappoint everybody, and how it's going to ruin my life, and I'm going to be paralyzed in that conversation rather than just doing the intelligent thing, which is, let's find out. I want to get a degree from a big university, and I'm really having trouble keeping up with my classes, so I decide cheating would be a good idea. Then I get kicked out of school. Well, I found out that that really wasn't a good idea. Is it wrong? No, because, boy, did I learn something really important.
With me?
So I'm not sure that I am, because it's very I don't know. I don't know what to say at this point. I think I'm going to have to process it, because it's not gelling for me.
Well, here's my best encouragement. First of all, listen to it again, okay? But don't confuse noodling with processing. They're not the same thing.
What do you mean by noodling, Sherry?
Going up into conditioned mind into a conversation about. Awareness practice consists of this. I have this confusion about something. I don't get it. I really don't get it. My favorite one was, it's not what, it's how. It took me years before I actually got what that meant. Okay? And I would look at that, you know, my teacher would say, you know, it's not what, it's how. Okay? He didn't even use the words content and process to give me a little hint, okay? And so he would say that, and I would go, what does that mean? What does that mean? And I would just basically walk around going, what does that mean? I didn't walk around going, okay, well, I think what it means is, but that doesn't make any sense, because if that meant that, then what would that say about that? And, well, it could mean that, but then if that's that, then what about those people who are, okay? I just stayed in, what the heck does that mean? And one day I was walking around and the lights came on and I saw it. That's the difference.
Okay. Do you think that would work for anybody?
Yes, anybody who does it. I've spent my life devoted to that premise. Yes, I think it can happen to anybody. And you know, Stephen,
So you just keep saying to yourself, what does it mean? But you don't entertain any possibilities of what it might mean.
That's right. All I do is stay with the question. What does that mean? What does that? That makes it a koan. What does that mean? What the heck does that mean? Now, if you're a praying kind, you can say things like, God, help me to understand this. Or, you know, a Buddhist would say, any moment now, I'm ready for enlightenment.
Well, I just like to say that I am certain that there are processes other than what you're saying that involve conversations that I am certain actually put me in center, because I've experienced it very clearly. I'm not convinced that what you're calling noodling is always unhelpful.
Okay, Stephen, great. That's great. That's great. You don't have to be convinced. I'm actually not trying to convince anybody. All I'm saying is what I see. That's it. That's it. If you want to do something else, that's what makes this such a grand free country. But what I'm not going to do is have intellectual discussions with people. I'm not.
Well, I guess.
You know what?
I guess it depends where you draw the line, because every time you open your mouth, you're using your intellect.
Using what?
You're using your intellect right now in talking to me. You have to be able to understand what I'm saying.
No, actually, most people would be appalled if they knew how little of that was going on. No, I don't. As a matter of fact, I'll confess this, which I do on occasion, that most of what goes on inside my head is just a big blank space. If life inspires something, if there is something that the intelligence that animates me wants to express, it arrives there and it's expressed. Other than that, it's pretty much a gap. I like it.
Well, that's something that that I can only relate to in for short periods of time, not going around all day like that.
Well, you see, that's why we do practice, because it is possible to go around like that all day long. Not only is it possible, it's absolutely joyful, makes life really, really easy, and one is able to accomplish things that one never imagined being able to accomplish, because life is able to do it at all. It's able to do everything that we ever dreamed of. In fact, it's the only thing that is doing any of it. And what I call noodling is what people do instead of simply being an open conduit for life to express. Okay, so I invite you to take a look at that, and then if you want to, you can let me know what you see.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Thanks.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Stephen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Barbara from Australia.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
What are you up to?
That was great. Listening to that last call, I really I found that really useful.
Oh, good.
I was thinking what did I want to talk about if I got through, and the right or wrong thing has been something that's been that's been coming up for me too, and. Yeah, just there's a couple of situations in my life. There's a situation in the relationship that I'm in, and the situation with my housing that are still where they feel like something needs to change or something needs to happen, and I just sort of seem to continue to be in a place of I don't know around it. And there's been an enormous kind of push from conditioned mind to go up into my head and try to figure it out.
And I
think a few months ago, that's getting less. I think the Zen awareness coaching's been really helpful. I've been just really trying to throw myself into practice as much as I can, listening to the radio show every week, and because a few months back when I got really sick, I got really just thrown back into sort of drowning in conditioning, and I'm just sort of slowly working my way back out of that, I think. But it's very strong, that the voice that's sort of, you know, screaming at me to try to figure this out, and that there's a problem and I have to solve it, and surely I should be doing something, and that if I just keep doing what I'm doing, which is, you know, just trying to stay as present as I can and just do the next indicated thing in my day and not go to those big issues in my head. It's hard for me to believe that that's going to work.
Right. Yes. Even though we've all had experience of it working, right? In the sense that, so, you know, if I look at what do I want out of life? Well, pretty much what I want is to enjoy myself, to be happy, to feel good, whatever that is. And I love being in nature. I love quiet. I love listening to birds sing, and I love watching the phases of the moon. And, you know, these are all pretty quiet, peaceful sorts of activities. And so that's kind of how I want to live my life, whatever it is that's going on. And I don't really like to leave that place in order to worry about stuff that I really can't do anything about. So I like to focus on that, and then to be in a place of, you know, my experience is when I know what there is to do, I'll do it. And the way I've always known what there is to do is that all of a sudden I know. So all of a sudden I know I want to move. Or all of a sudden I know I need that relationship not to be like that anymore. And once that knowing drops in, and that is the way it feels to me anyway, it just drops in. I don't think my way into it. It just drops in. Now, the voices then might kick in afterwards that go, well, but what about this and what about that? But when it's that solid life has kind of made a decision, those voices don't have any more power. Do you know that experience I'm talking about?
I do, and I guess I'm just still in the I don't know.
Yeah.
So that hasn't happened yet around sort of any of these issues really, and I've been I guess acting as if and trusting that, you know, law of impermanence, like it won't stay like this. Things will change.
Yes. Yes. And I can either be urgent about that, and I can make myself miserable going over the same information over and over and over and over and over, but I really can't do anything about it, you know, because I don't know. So I have to be patient. And for me, the being patient part is I'll just focus on enjoying life right now.
Yeah.
Which I hope is what I'll be doing when those circumstances change, as I'm pretty sure they will. They always have.
Yeah, there's a voice in there sort of that's telling me that I'm really stuck, that this isn't, you know, that because I've been sitting with this stuff and working with it in this way for quite a few months now, and, you know, it's still, nothing's shifted that much. Although actually that's not true, because how I am in myself, there's a lot less noise in my head than there was. And
that's right.
Yeah, so something has shifted, is shifting in me.
Yes, yes. And of course, what conditioned mind wants us to believe is, if we switch around the externals, we'll have a different internal experience. But we know that's not true. Right? So, yes, you're stuck and you're transforming. That's another way to talk about being stuck.
Yeah.
Right? My circumstances are the same and I'm changing inside as a result of that. Which to me is what our great opportunity is.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, it's such a big time at the moment. It has been for quite a few months, and I can, you know, I can see clearly that that it is a big opportunity, and I don't know where it's going to take me, and maybe it's not taking me anywhere other than, you know, where practice will take me.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what do I want out of life? I want to be happy no matter what, and I want to love unconditionally.
Yeah.
Well, what circumstances can I not practice that in?
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing, you know, that how much conditioning wants to tell me how badly I'm doing. And, you know, I was just skimming randomly through some of my recordings, and I came across the recording from maybe the first email class about recording my commitment to practice over the years. And it was just amazing to listen to that and, you know, I maybe should do another one at the moment, because the truth is that in this difficult time, I've really dived more into practice.
Yeah, there you go.
And conditioning would really have me believe the opposite of that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really doing so badly, and why aren't I, you know, more happy or more joyous or...
Yeah, yeah. I'm telling you, that recording and listening it's the secret weapon, isn't it? Because if we don't have that, we really have no proof. We just have the voice's word for it. You know, and it's like, well, I've been working really hard at practice. Yeah, but you haven't changed, so it doesn't really count. But if I can listen to recordings that prove beyond a doubt that, in fact, my life is changing and my practice is transforming me, then I've got a lot of incentive not to listen to those voices, or at least not to believe them.
Yeah. Mm.
And to make a statement like, you know, there's less noise in my head, or the voices have less ability to affect me, or, you know, they don't make me miserable like they used to. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's everything. You know, my life circumstances are exactly the same, and I don't suffer anymore. My life circumstances are exactly the same, and, you know, actually, I'm quite happy.
Mm.
That's what we're going for. Not all my life circumstances are, the content of my life is exactly the way I've always wanted it to be. I just talked to somebody today, as a matter of fact, who was telling me about a friend of hers who, over the years, she and her husband have moved up from not having that much to doing really well. And now they live in a great big house. And the woman was complaining because they've got a television set in every room of the house. And the woman I was talking to said, like, well, who put them there? No, this is your problem. You have a great big house with all these rooms, and every one of the rooms has a television. And that's what you're complaining about. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Sherry.
Oh, thank you. Continue to take good care of her, huh?
Yeah, I am, and it does work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Not it. We don't transform quite as quickly as the voices say we should, or quite as quickly as they fear we will. But we're moving right along.
Yeah. Yep. Getting there.
Getting there. And we're getting there. Okay. Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Barbara. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, what a pleasure and a privilege.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's great. Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Bye.